Hi, you're listening to Jeff Noble of the FASD Success Show. I've got an absolute juggernaut of an interview today with Dr. Petrenko. She is doing all kinds of amazing things. We have such a great conversation. We talk about how she went from completing 12 diagnoses a year to 220. We talk about busting myths on FASD facial features, IQ, the confirmation needed prenatal alcohol exposure to get a diagnosis. We talk about stigma. We talk about all the cool things she's doing, everything from an app to a documentary. Entry. Buckle up, settle in, because you're going to be absolutely amazed with what she's doing.
Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 72 of the FASD Success Show. Whether this is your first episode or your 72nd, welcome. I'm so pumped and honored that you're spending your free time with me. I know how precious that is with the hard job that you have to do. So trust me, I don't want to waste it and I want to get right into it. First, before I do that, though, I just want to let you know that we have a blog at www.fasdsuccess.com. It's actually our whole website, but we have a podcast link there. And you can go and read all the blogs and all the bios and get all the resources from each particular guest. Also on our website, we have books like my books, Making Sense of the Madness, and Soundbites and Sanity Savers. And I believe it's now 5, I'll have to double check, or 6 different languages. So that's pretty cool. We're adding and updating the website all the time. So don't forget to check that out. Also, if you need a little bit of extra support, if you are tired of doing this by yourself, you don't have to do this by yourself. We have a private Facebook group at facebook.com/group/FASD forever. We have over 3,500 people in there, caregivers, frontline workers, even some individuals on the spectrum in there. So if you need answers, if you need insight, and especially if you need to get outside of your own head, if you need answers to a question, you know, 3,500 people, somebody's going to run into your situation. It's excellent. We have some fantastic moderators. So, you know, the phrase is you don't have to do it alone. So come do it with us. Last but not least, we have a way that you could support the show if you like it. It's buymeacoffee.com/FASD success. It's voluntary. It's not mandatory, but we really appreciate it. And in fact, we had hit our goal. Our initial goal was $1,000 and we hit it. So I am offering to everybody who pitched in, I am going to do a 90-minute Q&A. What I think I'm going to do is actually do a FASD 101 and then answer some questions. So if you did support the show, Tara will be reaching out. We will be reaching out next week. I want to do an FASD 101 because I have to do one for and record it for a big group in Israel. And so they need time to translate it. And well, my Hebrew is next to none. So, you know, I think I could kill two birds with one stone. So that's www.buymeacoffee.com/FASD success. You guys have been leaving some sweet messages. I'm going to get in there and reply to some of those. So I hope you're doing well. I hope you're hanging on. I hope you're pulling it together. I know here in the Western world, it is summertime. I hope that you have a plan to survive so that we can get into the next school year, because there's, you know, people are getting vaccinated. I know where I live, things are opening up more and more. So it's exciting to see, and hopefully it can be sustainable. So if you hadn't got your vaccine yet, here's the health message. Go get one so we can all hug and hang out. That's what I got for you. Hey, you know what I did before we get into it? So our barber wasn't open yet, like the hair cutters where I go, and my hair was just getting long. So instead of waiting, I shaved it. So I shaved my head like a la G.I. Jane. Actually, Tara did it first. Tara did it first, and she made it a little longer. And then I was like, oh, I'm just going to touch this part up. And then I put the wrong size on, so it went shorter, and I had to do my whole head. So Tara seems to think it's cool. You can check it out. You can follow me on Facebook if you just want to be a buddy of mine on Facebook. I post a lot of pictures of Olivia, and just it's more personal, less FASD. You know, I shave my head because what happens naturally to some dudes as they get older is your hair starts to leave. And that's kind of what is happening to me. But I noticed this thing is, well, my hairline is kind of backstepping. It's backpedaling like a soccer goalie. I noticed that, you know, what's pulling up the slack is my eyebrows. And I never got that. You know, I don't even know why I'm talking about this, but who cares? I used to see older people, like older people, older gentlemen, and their eyebrows were just on fire, like just bushels. And I used to say, man, why don't you take care of that? Until I became 40 and I started to realize you almost have to stay on top of that every other day because it compensates for your receding hairline. In fact, you know what? Sometimes I believe that my eyebrow hair is trying to migrate to my hairline and it's trying to make its way up there. But the benefits of getting older. So that's a little bit of too much information for you. But honestly, who else am I going to talk to about this? I'm going to talk to you guys about this because you are my freaking people. Hey, if you're listening, if this is your first time, man, don't worry. This podcast is all about FASD success. It's about individuals having success. It's about caregivers having success. It's about anybody in the circle of that individual on the spectrum having success. So we can all have success because we all deserve success. And how do we do that? We do that by talking to some kick-ass people in the FASD world doing some really awesome things. And my guest today is no different, man. I'm getting right into the bio and then we're out of here. So today we're talking to Dr. Christy Petrenko. And I've been following her for a long time on Twitter, and so should you. And we'll give all that information. But I reached out because, you know, that's what you have to do to get people onto the show is you got to reach out. And I'm watching and she's doing all these things. And, you know, I'm like, oh, does she even know me? But apparently she's been following me too. So that was great to already have that rapport. And she is amazing. So Christy Petrenko, Dr. Christy Petrenko, is a clinical psychologist and researcher who has been conducting research with individuals with FASD since 2003. She completed her graduate training in San Diego in 2009 and is currently a faculty member at Mount Hope Family Center, University of Rochester. Her research focuses on developing and evaluating interventions for people with FASD, including the use of a mobile health technology to increase access to care. Dr. Petrenko also runs a multidisciplinary FASD clinic providing diagnostic intervention and family support services, man. And she's doing so much more. We're so lucky to have her on our team. I'm ready. Are you ready? Let's go. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, here I am with Dr. Christy Petrenko. Christy, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, you know it. And it's okay if I call you Christy?
Yes, please. That's
okay. Great. Because I would, it's just less chance I'm going to butcher it, right? So you're doing me a favor. So you're accommodating right out of the bat. That's what I like to hear. So you are heavily involved in FASD. I've followed you on Twitter and social media for a while, doing research, diagnostic clinics. I always like to find out the origin story of how did you get into the FASD arena? So how'd you do it? And what was the interest?
I think like many people, I fell into it. It wasn't something I knew much about. So my origin story with FASD starts when I entered graduate school. I was actually interested in autism from an undergraduate degree and had some experience working with kids with autism. And so that's what I knew. I applied to graduate school and I happened to be noticed by Edward Riley, who's at San Diego State University, who's faculty there. And he saw my application and he called me up and said, you know what, Christy, anything that you want to study with autism, you can do with FASD and more so. And I was like, what is this FASD thing you tell me about? Tell me more. So we had a nice conversation and he really just told me the great needs of the population. Also, I think what sold me initially was, you know, we know that alcohol is a major contributing factor to outcomes, but there's so much about both from basic science, what happens to people and families after the child is born, that really got me intellectually interested. But as I started meeting people with FASD, the passion, the advocacy, the great needs that need met really drew me in further and really kind of launched me on that career path.
And then you get hooked.
And you get hooked. I find that with people I talk to who don't know anything about FASD. You know, I have a documentary filmmaker that I'm working with, and you know, after the second interview with a family, he's like, this needs to be an interview. This needs to be a documentary. We can't have people not knowing about this. And he didn't know. And now he does. And it's become a huge passion of his as well.
It's 100%. It's almost like the Matrix, right? Once the evidence is presented to you, red pill, blue pill, I don't know which one, you know, gives you the truth. So we'll just, that's anecdotal, I guess. But then you're like, wow. And then when you start to learn about the prevalence and how it is such a diverse spectrum and what these families and kids and individuals overcome on a daily basis to function and to get through a day with limited to no supports, it is outstanding. It is amazing. And you end up putting them on a pedestal because they're the epitome of resilience, but they do need help. And so you started, I want to talk about the documentary, obviously, but you run a diagnostic clinic. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Here in Rochester, New York.
And so how many individuals are you able to do a month?
So our clinic is now doing around about 220 new diagnoses a year.
Wow. That's really good.
Yeah. That's huge. Well, especially considering we started when I came to Rochester in 2011, there was not a diagnostic clinic at all. And I ended up meeting a nurse practitioner and clinical director of our developmental disability services around 2014 at a Ground Rounds. She heard me speak about FASD and she's like, this can't be. And I'm like, I agree completely. Let's see what we can do. So we started seeing one kid a month. And, you know, over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, we've just gradually increased our capacity. We have our multidisciplinary model that now goes once a week. And then we also expanded to do single provider visits for kids who have enough school testing that we can, you know, do a medical part of the visit and make a diagnosis. And that's where we've really been able to grow capacity.
Never even heard of that. Sorry to interrupt. Can you explain that a little bit more? So a single visit. So they've had testing at school and there's enough evidence where you don't need to test, but you do the medical side of it. Am I sort of right? You explain.
Yeah, you're on. So they have had enough school testing where we can document that they have sufficient neurobehavioral impairment. And so then they come in and they see one of our developmental pediatricians or our nurse practitioners who we've trained as part of the clinic. And they do the facial eval, physical measurements, you know, a full elaborate history. They may do a couple of questionnaires looking more at behavior and things like that. But within, you know, an hour, hour and a half visit, they can render and figure out the appropriate diagnosis across the developmental spectrum and leave with recommendations. We've found, you know, the multidisciplinary is sort of like the Cadillac model. And, you know, we'd love to have a neuropsych eval for everybody to help inform intervention. But, you know, you could end up waiting a year or more for those kind of evaluations, where if you can bring someone in for a single provider visit in a much shorter amount of time, you can figure out, okay, this is the diagnosis. You can get them on the reframing and accommodations pathway. You can connect them with services in a much faster way. And we've seen some success with autism evaluations in our specialty clinic as well, which I think really geared us towards this mindset of, okay, how can we get people access to services faster?
Single provider model. That's awesome. This is the first time I've heard of it. So people are knocking down your door saying, how do we do this?
We're starting to talk with more and more folks. We actually have been recently, we did a process called ECHO, which is Extension of Community Healthcare Outcomes. It's an approach where you do telementoring with providers to teach them. You know, it's been HIV, autism, hepatitis. It's done all over the world, this approach. Well, we tried it with FASD diagnosis this last fall with primary care providers to see if we could train them at least the straightforward cases, because, you know, if we only are limiting to diagnosis to the specialty providers, you know, some states don't even have a specialty diagnostic clinic. You know, in New York State, we have our clinic and then there's a provider in New York City, but New York's a big state and that's all we have.
It's a massive state. It's a what is New York proper, like 15 million people or something like that?
I don't even know.
It's massive. Okay. So now, do you mind busting some myths for the audience, right? Because I get these all the time in our free group, which you can go to facebook.com/group/FASD forever and you can get in there. It's a closed group. There's about 4,000 caregivers in there. But here's what can you crush these myths? And we can arm parents who are talking to their primary healthcare provider, specifically their doctor, when we hear the doctor say there's no facial features.
Mm-hmm. And that's the case in about 90% of kids.
So what would you tell a parent to tell a doctor?
Well, I would have them explain that the facial features form in just a very small window of pregnancy, but the brain is forming throughout the entire pregnancy. So you can have significant alcohol effects on brain development throughout the whole period of pregnancy. And so there are FASDs that occur without the facial features.
Beautiful. Your kid is too smart.
That is a challenge for a lot of families, that people have the assumption that you have to have an intellectual disability or below average intellectual functioning to qualify for a diagnosis of FASD. But you really see the full range of intellectual functioning. I've tested kids who have intellectual disability, and I've tested many children who have average or above average intellectual ability. But the challenge is that those problems with executive functioning can occur even when you have average or above average IQ. And those are the things that impact you on an everyday basis that can make your everyday functioning, your adaptive skills, much lower. And those where we need the supports for kids.
No, that is beautiful. What does your clinic do when there's no confirmation of prenatal alcohol exposure?
That is a challenge for a lot of families, especially we see a lot of kids who are in some form of out-of-home care, whether it be foster care, adoptive, or, you know, in different situations. You know, we look to see if they meet any of the facial features or growth criteria, because with the diagnostic criteria that we use, the HOIMI 2016 criteria, if you have the face and the growth and the neurobehavioral features, you can get a partial FAS or a full FAS diagnosis. And so in those cases, we'll be able to do a diagnosis with that. Otherwise, we try to coach families and explore what other opportunities they may be able to uncover that may find additional information about prenatal exposure. We can coach them on how they might, if they have access to biological family members or friends who may have known, have familiarity with that time in pregnancy, we can try to coach them and see what they might be able to learn that might help document prenatal exposure.
Cool. Thank you. I'm a nerd. I'm an FASD nerd, well documented. And you mentioned 2016 criteria. Was it updated in the United States? I know Canada has different guidelines. What were some of the, in layman's for guys like me, what was some of the changes? Yeah. What were some of the changes? Did you add the other brain domain? What did you guys do?
So the HOIMI 2016 criteria are a revision of the original IOM criteria that came out in Institute of Medicine criteria that came out in 1996. They were revised in 2005 and then again in 2016. This is separate from the four-digit code.
Thank you.
So in the US, we have a couple of different diagnostic systems in play, which do add a lot of complexity.
Got it.
The 2016 HOIMI, which is of the Institute of Medicine kind of arm, their newest revision in 2016, I think, really did a lot to clarify both what is determined as confirmed alcohol exposure. They gave really clear criteria to use, which I think was an improvement over the 2005 guidelines. And then they also added a lot more detail to what counts as neurobehavioral evidence. So you can get neurobehavioral impairment in three different ways. It can be through evidence of a global intellectual delay. So it's 1.5 standard deviations for all those math nerds out there.
Yeah. So instead of two?
Yeah, they use 1.5 for this criteria.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
You could also, with cognitive impairment in four different ways, you could have impairment in executive functioning, memory, learning, or visual spatial skills.
Got it.
So in one or two of those areas, or you could meet through just behavioral impairment with self-regulation, with attention, mood, or like impulsivity, hyperactivity.
Like affect, right?
Yeah. So those are the ways you can meet the neurobehavioral criteria, which is much better specified than the prior guidelines. And that has helped us a lot in our diagnostic clinic. And through the different places I've worked, different projects I've been on, I've now used just about every diagnostic system that exists in the US and in Canada. I've used the Canadian criteria as well.
Okay.
Well, I've used it. I contracted with the World Health Organization on an international prevalence study they did in lower and middle income countries. And so they were using the Canadian criteria, at least the original 2005 Canadian criteria at the time, in parts of Eastern Europe and Sub-Saharan Africa. So we were training providers on how to use that as well. So it's pretty familiar with the different criteria. They're for the most part looking all at the same kinds of things. It's just different thresholds and cut points to kind of balance that sensitivity of finding cases when they exist and that specificity versus other types of conditions. So,
and at the end of the day, it's functioning.
Yeah.
How do they functioning? Are there multiple impairments? Do they meet the criteria within those impairments? Okay. I'll get off the nerd train because I know some folks are going, and you know what I'll do, guys? I'll make sure I go into, I'll explain some definitions about executive functioning and stuff. I always do that at the end, but I digress. Let's keep going because the more I'm talking to you, the more, not a big deal. I was working with the WHO, World Health Organization. And I bet you there's a lot of that. And that being humble is awesome, but we don't have to do that here. we could definitely talk about all the excellence. I want to go back to this documentary you're working with. Did you spark this? How did the documentary come along? What's it about? When's it coming out?
Yeah, great question. So
thanks.
The documentary came out of a intervention project we're working on to develop a mobile health intervention, which is a fancy word of saying app.
Yeah.
And in this app, I needed to produce video segments to help families learn about the different content and skills that we're teaching in the app. So I hired this production company here in Rochester, New York, and we went into families' homes that were willing to have us come and interview them and film them and their kids doing their life so that we could show the skills that we're teaching. And this documentary filmmaker hadn't really heard of FASD before, but after about the second interview of meeting the families that we were filming, he was just floored. He was like, how can this be? How can people not know about this? This is so important. This is just, I can't believe this isn't known. So it became a real passion project and idea for him as well. And so, you know, we're continuing to film for the app that we're making, but there was always this idea in the background of like, okay, once we're done with this app, let's do a documentary. And so we've been progressing on that the last couple of years, you know, with different concepts and ideas. For the documentary, the most important thing for me that I want to achieve with the documentary is to reduce the stigma about FASD, because I see stigma as underlying a lot of the challenges we face in the field. And so we've really explored different ways to try to change stigma and how you do that in a documentary. And what we've really come to is that the lived experience of people who are impacted by FASD is going to do more good than I think just trying to give people knowledge and education. You can kind of weave in those points that you want to make, but it's really connecting with people on, you know, who are in the video and coming to see them in their full humanity. And so it's really important to me to show the full range of people and not just these are their challenges. Yes, there are challenges. We're not going to deny that. And there are barriers and frustrations. And we've documented a lot of that in research. But we've, in trying to teach people about FASD and improve awareness, we've really only focused for the most part on the problems and the deficits. And so when you Google FASD, what do you see? You see some of the secondary problems, you see a lot of challenge, you see a lot of barriers, but you're missing the joy of people with FASD and the the cool things they can do and their interests, and they are very capable. We just have to get out of their way and also give them the supports to show their full talents. And so I'd like us to change the story about FASD in that way. And I'm hoping this documentary can help do that, you know, along with other things.
Some specific stigma that you have seen or that have been a values clash to you, where obviously you've had to witness this or hear it or to finally say, hey, like this isn't the story. What is some of the specific stigma that families deal with?
It's pretty pervasive, but some of the things that I encounter on my everyday life and my role as a provider and a researcher is I get families who email me and they have really little kids and they're asking me, you know, they might be considering about adoption, and they ask me, should I adopt these children? What's the likelihood that they might end up in jail or that they might have poor outcomes? You know, and it's heartbreaking because it's, you know, yes, there are a lot of challenges and those outcomes do happen for some people, but to have that be your only vision, the life course for people with FASD is sad to me. But I understand where that's coming from for families, but, you know, and then I see a lot of people with FASD who people misinterpret their behavior very easily and think they're just being bad or manipulative.
Unmotivated, lazy.
And a lot of times it's just we haven't set the environment or the supports up for them to be successful. We're asking them to do things they can't. And so, you know, if someone is going through their whole life where they're constantly being reprimanded or told they're not doing good enough, and you just see that spark start to fade, and yeah, so that's
true. And so basically what you're saying, and what I believe, and I talk about it in my live training, is that Einstein quote, and I think it's Einstein because everybody says it is, everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it's stupid.
Yeah.
And so we put individuals on the spectrum in these situations and require them to function, and they don't have the tools to do so. That is not their fault.
Yeah.
Anyone could be successful with enough support. Okay. And I'll say, look at some of the world leaders we've had or had, you know, and I'm not saying names, but in general, in the world, you could do anything. And now it's also incumbent to have individuals on the spectrum buy into support, because I believe our narrative in society's narrative, because everybody wants to be normal. And so we keep talking, you know, independent, you know, in order to be successful, you got to do it on your own. You can't have anybody help, you know? And so then individuals want to be normal, just like everybody else. And so they believe in order to do that, they have to be independent and do it on their own. And getting help means you're dumb or you're stupid or you are incapable, which is not the truth at all. You know, and so especially in my group, I teach interdependence and that it's okay, because even you, Christy, what are you not good at? No, I'm asking, what do you need support
with?
Yeah,
no, it's like, okay, my personal challenges. Oh, there are for sure some being patient sometimes, you know, getting out of the house with my own kid or, you know, spelling.
So do you get Do you get support for that? Because if you don't, then if you're having trouble getting your kids out of the house, you could believe, you know, your kids are doing it on purpose, or I'm a bad mom. Why can't I just, what won't they listen? Why can't I get it together? Spelling is an issue. So I use Grammarly. Like I focus on the red line to make sure I could do it right. But if you didn't have that support, you know, you would believe that about yourself. And then on top of it, having people tell you that you're lazy, unmotivated, manipulative because of the facial features, and people don't look at functioning. No wonder, right? So I totally concur with you. How do you, and I still want to talk about the documentary, but how do you deal with other folks in your profession that maybe aren't buying into the disability?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of compassion for providers and caregivers too, because they're in the same boat that a lot of us are, or at least when we first came into FASD, is how do you know different, you know, if you haven't been taught either, you know? So it's a broader societal mm-hmm. thing. So I, you know, for the most part, caregivers, providers, teachers, we all want to do a good job, right, when we can. So I kind of go in with that mindset. And, you know, I've been trained in approaches such as motivational interviewing, which is really trying to figure out people's values and goals, and then trying to help align, you know, whatever it is. So if I'm working with like a teacher or another mental health therapist, and, you know, I go in with the assumption that they probably haven't had a lot of exposure to FASD. And I make sure to come in and not like I'm the expert coming in to tell you what to do. And I'm like, I'm here in this context with this family, for example. And, you know, we're really trying to understand your experience with Johnny. And we'd really want to help make school easier for him as well as for you. You know, what teacher likes to constantly feel like they're not being successful with working with a child or a family? And so we try to establish some common ground and also really think about, you know, what are your goals, and, you know, helping them see the advantages of learning about FASD, and that might help them achieve their goals easier with less stress and frustration. And so we all try to get on that page together and figure out how to do that. And with that mindset and that perspective, I find, you know, 90% of the time people get really interested and want to learn more. And so you kind of set the stage, and people have the ability to learn and find the information once they see the advantages and the priorities of doing that. And so it's really just sort of starting that conversation and that relationship with people. And I found that to really help quite a lot. But going in the mindset that people are not wanting to learn about FASD because, you know, usually it's just they just don't know and they don't see the advantages. But when you help them do that, then most of them really, really become quite curious and want to learn more.
That's fair. Do you think in your case, it's 90% because you are a professional? Because I find some parents, you know, the professionals think the parents are part of the problem.
Yeah, I have encountered situations where the relationship has become pretty challenged. And, you know, when a neutral neutral third party comes in, sometimes I can help facilitate that and help both sides see, you know, there is true intent to help the child and the family or the adults, you know, and kind of come together. But yeah, I think families definitely have a harder road trying to move that needle. I think there are benefits, you know, sort of being seen as like the expert, even though you try to really develop a collaborative role, you know, that it is easier in that way.
Agreed. And also, you're an excellent communicator. I have no doubt you could probably disarm a bomb by just talking to it, which is good. It's a great skill to have. I want to, because you're doing a lot, right? So last thing, is there a release date for the documentary, or are we still just inching our way because of time, resources, and all that?
Yeah. Okay, when you got your hand in a lot of pots, you know, it's hard to really move things quickly. Although we did just create a short 10-minute version of sort of, I call it like our storyboard, where we had using pandemic filming. So it's a lot of Zoom video. The video quality isn't as high as, you know, what's in our app or what we'll do when we go to do the filming, but we're in our early fundraising stage. We have our good concept. We have, you know, some families identified that we'll likely feature. And now it's just getting the boots on the ground and getting out there and filming and pulling it together. But I think that will come together pretty reasonably once we really kind of get going, but we're about to launch, I think.
Yeah, that's excellent. I want to segue here because another project, and you've been dropping hints about it. You guys have or are in the middle of creating an app and testing it. It's called the Family Moving Forward FMF Connect. Whose was this your idea? Like from conceptualization to initialization, how did that happen?
Yeah, so you know we've been doing. I had a research trial before the app where we tested an in-person intervention with there's a standard Families Moving Forward program that's done with a therapist that Heather Carmichael Olson, a close colleague of mine, developed out in Seattle at Seattle Children's Research Institute. We'd been doing that and I had a skills group and, you know, it was kind of an intensive program and families really liked it and it showed some initial efficacy. But, you know, as I was learning and doing this study, it became really apparent that, you know, with that trial, you know, we served like 30 families over like 2 years. And that was a huge endeavor. But that's 30 families out of like thousands and millions of people who have great need. And so, you know, we were trying to think about, okay, how do we really move the needle on this kind of thing? And so, you know, Ed Riley, who was my graduate school advisor, had kind of approached me about this idea of maybe doing some kind of app or mobile health type of thing. And there's this international consortium called the Collaborative Initiative on FASD. And he was like, you know, think about maybe putting something in for this for the next round. And I was like, an app, you know, I was curious. And so I thought more about it. And, you know, it seemed like a really good idea. It's a self-directed app, so you can reach a lot of people. Now, do I think the app itself is going to, you know, address everyone's needs? No. But I think it's going to give like that kind of lower level of support that might be enough for some people. It may also be a good introduction and sort of get people going on a direction, a new direction and way of thinking. It's a tool.
It's a further, because parents, they got the bat belt, right? You know,
yeah.
They have the utility belt. And so you're the gadget person. You're the Alfred, literally. And, you know, and because the parent is the superhero here in this version of the story. So the app is another thing in their utility belt that they have access
to. And so the app is derived actually from the Full Families Moving Forward program. And it actually translates a lot of the content and principle and methods from the therapist led program. And so it's sort of, we're trying to meet kind of reach a lot of people and have a lot of impact just because more people will be able to access this information.
Uh-huh.
But we're starting to plan our next grant, because you're always thinking of the next grant a couple years down the road, right? And so what our next idea is to really sort of look at this middle level. So we have the full standard Families Moving Forward program you do with a therapist. And then we're moving closer to having the app out commercially available for people, probably in the next year or so. And then we're looking to develop this middle level where we're going to try to reach a lot of mental health clinicians using, I mentioned that Echo thing before, where you can do telementoring with therapists. So we did it with primary care providers, and now we're thinking of doing it with mental health providers to try to help them with like a provider assisted app, you know, and sort of meeting that FASD informed care middle level. So really having a continuum of care of lower level, middle level, and higher intensity level to try to meet people's needs, but knowing that in order to have the biggest impact, really thinking about scalable ways to reach the most people that we can. And knowing that our workforce is our biggest barrier. We have very few people in the community who know about FASD and can provide that appropriate support. So
it looks good. I'm at the website fmfconnect.com, and you can learn more about the app, but you're also recruiting caregivers and families to test this, correct? Then the criteria is to be from the United States?
Yes, currently. So the FMF program, we've done quite a few developmental studies. So we got feedback from families, because the biggest thing as we're developing these interventions is I need to have input from caregivers and families and people who are impacted by this from the start. I don't want to develop something I think is cool and then get it out in the world and find that it's not really meeting what people need or want. So we've included caregivers at every step. So we've done beta testing. We did a feasibility trial. And starting this September, we're going to do our larger efficacy trial. And it's going to be in the US. And partly we had to limit it to the US for now, because some of the content is very specific to different kinds of systems of care that differ across countries. But once we have the app, we show that it's helpful, we'll be able to have it commercialized in app stores so people can access it. And at that point, we're also looking into options to work with people in different countries to tailor some of that content that's country specific, so that we can make the app much more widely available. It'll be easy to do in English speaking countries, but it wouldn't be that difficult to do in other countries with different languages either.
That's excellent. Yeah. And so if people want to participate, they could just go to fmfconnect.com, and you have who you can email and how to, and also there's the ability to sign up for your newsletter. You want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're having a newsletter that will provide periodic updates on how the app is coming along, our new study findings. We'll also highlight some of our partners and the work that they're doing. So there'll be some cool new research tidbits. I promise we'll do it in lay language, so it won't be all researchy, nerdy speak. But and it will also let people know when our new studies are up. It will also tell folks we have another app that we're developing too with adults with FASD. And that one is being done in a way that I think will be accessible across different countries. And we have engaged a group of adults with FASD, many of which are on the Adult Leadership Board of FASD Changemakers. They're working with us to develop the app, and it is such a fun project. And we've been having advisory board meetings, every month or so, and just sharing our ideas of what we think and getting their ideas and really partnering together to develop the app. So it's really cool. And we'll be doing some focus groups online here in the fall as well. So we'll probably announce in our newsletter for if you have people who are adults with FASD who listen to your podcast, keep an eye out for that. And would love to hear your ideas too.
Okay, man. What else you
Sorry to
got?
throw that one at
No,
you.
no, no,
By the
no, no.
way, we're
I
doing this
want
other app.
no. So my next question is, yeah, tell me more. So what do you have in pre-planning then? It sounds like you got a lot going on up there, Christy. Like, okay, what else do you want to do? It might only be here, but just put it into the universe. This is a great place to do it. We're going to amplify what you want to make it so. So what else do you want to do?
Well, so we have the adult app, and that's in progress, and we're developing that now. And in this, the collaborative initiative on FASD, that we're working on that grant now that will go in, for like the next cycle. And in that includes the working with mental health providers that I mentioned with that middle tier of the continuum of care. We'll also continue on the adult health. But we're also planning to do something for adolescents too. We're really trying to get across the lifespan. My end all, not my end all goal, but my like next 5, 10 years goal is to really start to develop a continuum of care across the lifespan. We're closest for the childhood period, mainly because that's what we know most, right? Most of the research on FASD has been like, 3 to 12, 3 to 16 year olds. We're getting to know a little bit more about adults, and I think a lot to the credit of the adult leaders with FASD really being like, hey guys, we're adults. Look what happens. We need to
We're
know
here. We
about
grow
this,
up.
And and there's a huge gap for adolescents too. And that's a really tricky time, where adolescents want, they want to fit in. Who doesn't, And there's the added challenge of that gap between where they are developmentally and sort of where peers are and where they'd like to be. And it's a challenge for caregivers to try to, you want to arm your kids with the skills to help them be as successful as they can, but you also want to keep them safe and you want to get along with them, in your household. So it's a tricky balance for people. And so trying to help give families tools in that period.
It's
So
awesome.
yeah.
Like you're busy, man. Like
I am
what do you
busy.
okay. So what do you do when you're not in this arena?
When I'm not doing FASD work,
Yeah, what do you like to do? What does Christy like to do, like
well,
as a
I
human?
actually have a pretty good work-life balance, surprisingly. I have a kiddo who's 9, and in my family, we do a lot of stuff outdoors, a lot of hiking and backpacking, and stand up paddle boarding and kickball and
Cool.
soccer mom. I'm a soccer mom. I get out there in my chair and cheer my kiddo on, so trying to live my best life too. But yeah, I wished I had another one of me too, because it would just make all these research ideas and things for families, and adults with FASD, could do even a lot more.
Yeah, no,
So.
absolutely. I didn't hear in what you do on this as a human with your family. I didn't hear you mention the Rochester Americans at all. And as a Canadian, I'm a little disappointed by
I'm sorry. I grew up in
that.
Ohio, so my worldview is very much into football.
No, I get it. I get
Ohio
it.
State Buckeye at heart here.
Yeah,
like, hard
I
to
totally
like.
understand. I figured that the Americans were an institution in Rochester at the I've been, that's why at the Memorial Gardens. But hey, if just check it out at least, and you will appeal to me. You'll say, hey kids, we gotta go see this because Jeff said, and we can tell him we did it, and I really appreciate it. Last question. What's the last cool thing you've watched on Netflix? If people, because people are always looking for recommendations.
I have a good one. It is called Love on the Spectrum.
Oh,
it
yeah,
is actually I've seen that. A documentary.
That's I love that. Love on the Spectrum. If you guys haven't seen it, it's they follow autistic individuals and their families and about the dating life and getting ready for life. I'll mention, I'm going to spoil one scene in Too Bad So Sad, because there's many great scenes, but it's just it was one of the most perfect scenes about accommodations, where this couple that were both autistic and they were living together, and they went out to have like a romantic weekend, and the boy was upset because his socks were wrong. Do you remember this?
Yes, I remember that.
The socks were the wrong color. And so he started pacing, perseverating on it and getting stuck on it. And she tried to say, hey, well, what about these socks? These socks, we could do this. And then it was one of the best things of accommodation. She saw it and she goes, come on, let's go get the socks. Like, she knew it wasn't going to be good unless we go get the socks. And it warmed my heart so much and she's got it. Like, you know, that may not be a big deal to you, but that's a big deal to him, and she's accommodating him. And I won't spoil the rest of that episode.
Well, I think they both are on the spectrum, and I think just really had a beautiful relationship. And actually, one of the adults with FASD that we interviewed for the documentary was the one who recommended that I watch that. And it just speaks to the kind of tone of the documentary we want to film as well, because you see the full humanity. You know, they have autism, and the whole focus of the documentary is on something that most people wouldn't assume people with autism are interested or would be able to do. And they have, you know, it's lovely. You know, you just start to get to know them as people, and they're interesting, and you get so connected in with them, and you're cheering them on for success. Dating is hard for everybody.
But
you know?
It also, sorry, just trying to get my my focus here. Hold on 1 second. Isn't it also? It also demonstrates the importance of coaching and modeling, and not assuming they know the skills, right? And it was also heartwarming, but also in practical in application, to literally go through and say, at the beginning, you do this. At the beginning, you do this. You ask this, and how it worked for them, right? I agree with you. I agree. I'm glad we jammed over that. This was excellent. I had such a good time. Where can people find you if they just want to follow all the cool stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. So you can find me there at CL Petrenko. We also, our FMF Connect project also has a Twitter page. So that's at FMF Connect. If you Google Christy Petrenko, you'll probably find a number of things about me too. Our university is really great at highlighting some of the cool work and projects that my students and I do. So yeah, feel free to check us out, and the newsletter. Sign up for the newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely. And anybody you want to give a shout out to? Success isn't in isolation. Anyone on your team? Who do you got that's really...
Oh gosh, we could be here a while. I have a wonderful team. And yeah. I realized I wasn't able to mention, you know, on all of these app projects, I work with another faculty member in electrical and computer engineering. And he is the most delightful person.
What's his first name?
His name is Cristiano Taparello.
Cristiano, we love Taparello. You, buddy.
Taparello. Yeah, he didn't know about FASD either. And now, you know, he's just so excited about, you know, contributing to these tools. Also, Heather Carmichael Olson, who I mentioned, who developed the Families Moving Forward program. She has just been such an important mentor in my career. And there's so many more, like Ed Riley and Sarah Mattson, and, you know, people here at Mount Hope Family Center where I work, who've just been so supportive. And I think I would never be able to do half the things I do without all of the support that I get
all
here.
The interdependence.
Yes, lots of that.
This has been great. Will you come back and do this again?
Sure, anytime. I literally can talk for days about
No,
FASD.
yeah,
So,
me too. But people go on their walks with us, right?
yeah.
And so sometimes they even tell me that if we're not done, they do some extra laps in their car or whatever the case may be. So we want to honor their time, and you give us a lot to chew on, a lot to think about, a lot of things to check out. I just want to say personally, I'm very glad you're on our team when it comes to FASD. And if you need anything from me to help bridge that gap with what you're doing, because I think it's awesome, and I just want to say thanks again for being here, buddy.
You're welcome. Anytime. I know I've been following you for years, and we recommend all of our families when they get new diagnosed. I'm like, check out Jeff Noble. It's lots of helpful stuff there.
That struck me a little bit, and I was, because I thought, usually when I message people and I just say, hey, this is me, and it was just nice. It was nice to hear that you were familiar with my stuff, and it just goes to show you that although this is a worldwide problem, the community is small and it's a good one. So thanks again, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Dr. Petrenko, thank you so much. Oh, that was awesome. And honestly, it is super motivating. I want to run through a brick wall after listening to that interview because you are doing so good. Keep going, build your team. Isn't that amazing, though, how resourceful some people could be going from 12 individuals to 220 individuals? And I hope that spreads like wildfire, literally having on-site assessment after taking, getting the data. Oftentimes, individuals on the spectrum, their files are huge, right? My old mentor said, if the file weighs more than the kid does, there's a possibility of FASD. So could you imagine the pace, because it is long. I know some diagnostic clinics in Canada that can only do two people a month because it is so extensive, because you have so many people involved. And if there is a way where we could speed that up and still keep the accuracy, kudos to you. I think that's just excellent. I can't wait to see your documentary because clearly she gets it. And I like that the fact that she touched on stigma. There's so much stigma. There's stigma around drinking. There's stigma around birth moms who we love. There's stigma around the individuals themselves. Stigma around the parents. And that is because people just don't know. People haven't been educated, and it's our job to do that. And when you don't have the right information, you're going to come to some conclusions. But slowly and surely, I believe we are getting there. And also, I'm glad she busts some myths. And we've done that before, but I don't know how many times I hear, the facial features, facial features, facial features. Well, over 90% of people who are exposed in utero don't have any of those facial features. There are none. So if your doctor has ever told you that, go and get a second opinion, because that is not the case. And it doesn't matter what country you live in, that is not the case. And that's what makes this disability so hard, because you cannot see it. You cannot see it. And until we, like the mass collective, change our perception and understand that behaviors, these aren't willful, purposeful. Our kids aren't trying to be bad. They are struggling, and they're doing their best to manage what they have with the tools they've been given in the environment they're in. So if we could change some of those things, change the perception of how we look at individuals with an organic brain injury, if we change the environment, and also, last but not least, get the caregivers the help they need. And speaking of which, if you are in the US, there's been a lot of talk about this FASD Respect Act. I don't have all the details, but I know that it is in the US, and it is led by some big senators and also folks in Minnesota. Susan Carlson, Proof Alliance. There's another FASD podcast. It's called FASD Hope with Natalie. Look it up. I believe she had the folks who are pushing the bill on there. So change is coming. Change is happening. There are people like Dr. Christie out there doing really good work. And there are people out there. So do not lose hope. We know more, and we know more, and we could do better. And so what could you do? You could learn more. And when you learn more, you could do better. And you could do better by hanging out with people. That's why we push our free group so much on Facebook, is so once you're surrounded by individuals, by other caregivers who are going through a day to day, you don't feel like you're on this island. You don't feel like you're the only one dealing with this, because you are not. This is the most predominant developmental disability on the planet. You are the majority. You are not the minority. So, you know, one of my favorite sayings is, I heard on Facebook, I don't really know who to contribute it to, but it's not me, is that don't raise your voice, improve your argument. There are ways out of this. There are ways to have a better life, not only for you, but for your family as well. And I'm freaking rooting for you, man, because I believe you could do it. I've seen so much success now that it is firmly ingrained in my belief system. Does stuff get hard? Absolutely. Is it really difficult to deal with? Yes, even on the best days. But it is manageable. And not only can you just survive this thing, but you could literally, you could thrive. And there's a lot of people doing that. So, you could do it. And the fact that you're listening to this, and if you're listening to this all the way to this juncture, you're kick-ass. You're a badass person in a positive way. Like, because you know what it takes, and you're trying. Because it's hard, right? Because we put that in our front of our mind. We get motivated. Hopefully this podcast fills your cup. And then you get back at it. And, you know, people are calling you names. There's violence. There's aggression. There's all kinds of stuff. But hey, speaking of aggression, I am coming out with a free series on that. So just keep your eyes peeled. It's going to be a mini video series. I'm working on it as we speak. Because that has been the number one thing that we found out from our group is what people are dealing with. And so I just want to break it down. I want to get into it more. I want to make it a little bit more understandable for you, and so give you action steps to lower that if you're dealing with that at home. But kudos to you, man. Keep kicking ass. Thank you so much for listening. And again, if you helped support the show, you're a freaking rock star. I love you for it. You can hook us up at buymeacoffee.com/FASD, FASD success. And your direct results are the direct results of this podcast sounding a little bit better and being a lot more organized because we able to have the people to do that now. So freaking pull up your bootstraps. You could change. If you're been having a shitty day, a shitty week, a shitty month, you could turn it around. You have the power to do that. You can control your breath. You can control your reaction. You can control the people that you associate with. So if you need to do it, do it. Again, jump into our free group. I love your face. I will see you back here next week. We have another awesome interview coming up. Until then, keep pushing, keep grinding, keep growing. I love you, and I will see you back here next week. All right, until then, we'll talk soon. Bye.